you don't wanna be. This ain't no home sweet home, it's our home sweet misery. We knew when we got here, they tried to put us away. But when they seen us walk down the street, they ran the other way.
Back free Atlanta, DA. Back free in the whole USA.
Hello, hello, and once again,
hi-ho!
Once again, it's time for Crazy Comics and Stories. I'm your Uncle Rat Bastard, Corey Strode, and at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe Crazy Rider. How you doing?
You know, Al Gore invented the internet all by himself, chewing gum one day, found himself a paperclip, and invented the internet.
Well, we could get into that, but we're not going to do politics or religion.
No. Maybe the Great Pumpkin, but they got to get close to Halloween for that.
That's actually one of the things they've said on the No Name Show on PWInsider.com, where, you know, they don't talk politics or religion because no matter what you say, you're going to make half the audience mad. Kind of like in comics, how if you mention Rob Liefeld, you make the entire audience mad.
You know, it's funny because I'm sitting here. I got a copy of Youngblood number 8 with the Obama on the cover. So I think I'll just throw that one out.
So they're doing an Obama issue too?
Oh, yeah. I got the old shredder ready. We'll get rid of it right now. There we go. Bye-bye. There. One less life-filled comic in the universe.
Yeah, there's still about 100 million of them from the early 90s. Of course, let's remember the one time people got really mad at me on that TV show we did.
Collecting stuff with butts and wits.
Yes. It was a cable access show, and you were the masked collector, and yes. I was your backup muscle. One time they had me talk, and I did reviews of comics I didn't like. And I started ripping them to shreds on the air. And half the people were mad that I was ripping comics up. You know, how dare you? Those are collectibles. The rest got mad because the last joke I did was with the X-Men. I just said, and with the X-Men, just set it down and walk away.
Walk away. I remember that.
And I set the comic down and I walked away. And that was the end of the bit. And people were mad that if you tore up all the other comics, why didn't you tear up the X-Men?
You know, when I first got on there, I think it was that thing that what do they call it? Heroes Reborn?
Yes.
And I think I was reviewing a Captain America issue.
Oh.
And I just ripped it up and threw it in the air and said, who wrote this? Forget about it, you know? So.
Heroes Reborn. Have they made it so that didn't happen yet? Did someone make a deal with Mephisto so that story didn't happen?
Well, you're reading Captain America. Isn't Bucky / Nomad running around now?
Yes, which proves that nothing goes away.
And besides, isn't that whole universe inside the Sleeping Celestial or whatever her name was?
By that point, I'd lost all interest.
Well, that was actually, I think, later on when they tried to figure out what we're going to do with this universe that Franklin Richard popped up. I'm telling you, that boy is just too powerful to be around.
Well, and I think they're dealing with it again in the Fantastic Four. But before we get into that.
Way before.
This show has sponsors. Someone gave me $20 to mention Worldwide News. It's a comic strip on the interwebs about the lowest rated cable network written by me, your Uncle Rat Bastard, your charming and delightful Uncle Rat Bastard, Corey Strode, and drawn by Dandy Dan Moore. It updates Tuesdays and Thursdays, and it's starting its third major storyline when the writers realize that one of the on-air personalities will say whatever they write, and hijinks ensue.
Yeah.
And Joe, do you have any sponsors?
No, I don't have paying sponsors, but I do have people that I really like, such as the Midwest Comic Book Association. They're having their Spring Con Comic Book Celebration May 15th and 16th It's at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds in the grandstand. Something for everyone, and everyone is welcome. More information, www.midwestcomicbook.com. That's midwestcomicbook.com, one word. And even as we speak, they have posted their mighty guest list, and I have it here online. And just to name off a few of the names, we talked, the big guest, of course, is the biggest man in comics, Jim Shooter. He'll be there. Terry Beatty will be there. I'll tell you, I am really bad with pronouncing names, Corey, so if I screw something up, let me know. Let's see. We got Xander Cannon, Kevin Cannon, the Cannon brothers. Yeah, I think they'll have fezzes on their head, so they'll be easy to spot. I'm scrolling down and I'm in the ease, and it goes on and on. Pat Gleason from Green Lantern Corps, Terrence Greep.
I got a few names I'll mention.
Okay.
One that'll bring out all the fanboys. Adam Hughes will be there. It's been a couple of years since he's been there. Adam Hughes will be there. And a guy who I've loved his art forever, and he's never seemed to be a big name, but any book he puts out, I'm at least interested in, and that's Pat Broderick. His work on the Micronauts was a lot of fun. He did Captain Atom, when DC got the character. And then he did an independent book from Pacific called Sunrunners.
I remember that.
I loved Sunrunners. It was almost a mix of science fiction and superheroes, and again, never had an ending because a lot of those indie books in the 80s just kind of, is it coming out again?
My friend Pete Krause is going to be there, Power Shazam artist, and of course he's doing Irredeemable for Boom Studio, which is a fantastic book to pick up.
But the two biggest stars, the two people that people are demanding, you and me will be running the charity table.
Yes. Yeah, and if you... I got to get this cleared from the boys who run the place, but I think what we did last year is we had a bunch of stuff that had been donated to the con that we kind of did a reverse con table. People would come up and say, how much is this? And we're like, well, it's for charity. How much do you want to give? And it really baffles people because everybody assumes that, this $30 variant cover, they're going to want $30 for it. Nope. We said, you tell us the price, knowing that it all goes to charity. Not that we're trying to guilt more money out of you or anything.
But we are.
But we had some guy dropped off a whole bunch of kitchen appliance tools, the type of stuff like as seen on TV, like the turnip twiddle twaddle.
Oh, that wasn't just some guy. That was Nick Post, the person who runs the con. And he told us why he did that, what it is. On Sunday mornings, he has the TV on while he's doing stuff. And he is the biggest mark in the world for infomercials. So that was just stuff. He just took a box of the infomercial stuff he'd bought out of his closet and brought it to us.
And we remember we sold tube socks.
Yes.
We had
deodorant.
Deodorant, yeah. It's almost like it's a slash charity booth slash rummage sale. And I think what we're going to do is we'll actually, if people got things they want to donate and you can take a tax write-off on it, we'll have a form set up there for everybody. Like I said, I'm pretty sure I can get this approved. But you got some stuff, you're going to donate it or your garage sale it. As long as it's new, bring it in and it all goes to charity.
And there were a lot of comic book stuff too. There was a lot of... A lot of comic packs. There was some original art. There were trade paperbacks.
Neon signs. Just fantastic. The two charities, just to mention them, that the MCBA works with is the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund and the Lupus Foundation of Minnesota. 100% of the proceeds raised at the booth will go to there. Plus, on Sunday, they have their infamous art auction where some of the coolest original art and other comic book memorabilia is auctioned off. And all that money goes 100% to the either Comic Book Legal Defense Fund or the Lupus Foundation. And as long as we're talking about the Comic-Con's charity, Y'all know I do an eBay site. It's under Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. I'm working with the con guys, and I've taken some of the stuff that they've had, and I have it on eBay now that you can go bid on. And again, 100% of the proceeds go to the charities. I eat the eBay fees. And we've got a really unique item on there. I don't normally talk about the items I have on eBay because by the time we get the podcasts on, some of the auctions are done, some are stopped. There is a link to it at our website, which is
CrazyComics with an X .SolitaireRose.com, part of the Solitaire Rose family of websites.
Ooh, I get the shivers when I think of that. So you can link right to the site that has all the auctions going currently, but the one I'm talking specifically about is called the Kolchak Papers. It's a hardcover from, I believe it was Moon Knight Studios.
Moonstone,
thank you. And it basically has the first two stories done by Jeff Rice. Now, what makes this unique is that this particular hardcover, it's a slipcase limited hardcover, was signed by Jeff Rice. And most people know, if you're fans of him, that he lives a hermit-style lifestyle. He is very rarely signs anything. He only signed 300 copies of this particular hardcover, and this is not, we got number 57. It's on eBay right now. I've got it at its original price of $99.99, but I also put a make an offer on it. So if you want to go on, take a look at it, make an offer. Anything you bid or offer, assuming I accept it, 100% of that will go to the charities. I give it right to the MCBA, and they'll take care of it. So check it out. I've also got a number of other fun things up. That's pretty much all I got to say about that.
All right. Let's get into what we promised the people. Last week, you said you hadn't read The Amazing Spider-Man. Now, you know, this week, there wasn't an issue that came out that I know of. No, wait, there was. There was the big issue. Peter Parker got fired, and it actually got picked up by the news. So, Joe, what do you think of Amazing Spider-Man lately? Now that you're all caught up.
I didn't read it.
You didn't read it. I told you we were doing this.
No, I had a couple weddings I had to go to.
You could have read them at the wedding. There's a lot of just standing around.
See, the weddings were in the comic books. Okay? The first wedding was True Story, Swear to God, number 12. This comes from Image, and it's created by a gent, let me find his name here, Tom Beilen. Essentially, it's a slice of life type comic book that he did. He basically moved to Puerto Rico to be with the woman he met at a bus stop in Disney World. Now, there's been two series of this. The first series was self-published and, of course, is reprinted in a really cool paperback by Image. And then issue 12 just came out last week, and this is actually the wedding issue. What happened when Disney got word that these two met at a bus stop at Disney World, they offered them to be married at Disney World free of charge. And we finally got up to the part where they got married. And that's what issue 12 is. Now, the thing about issue 12 has been a long time since the other 11 have come out. Because what happened is Tom apparently fell in 2008, late 2008. Landed on his hand, and he got something happened where his hand shook so badly he was not able to draw or letter his comics. So this particular one, number 12, milestone in two ways. First of all, not only does it cover his marriage, but second, he finally was able to get well enough where he can draw now. So I'm glad to see. I was actually surprised to see it come out because I really thought he had done a number on himself and was not able to return to comics, but he finished it. It's out. After you're done listening to this, go out and get it.
Well, hold on. He did some work where he didn't have to draw. He's done some one-shots at Marvel. He did back when they had their Marvel Romance.
Romance, yes, and it was killer. Oh, it was a good story.
And then he did another one with The Thing and the Human Torch in Puerto Rico that was a lot of fun.
I missed that one. I'll have to dig that one up.
I don't remember the name of it, but he's able to write superheroes very well, which a lot of people who'd work in indies on autobiographical stuff, they're not able to translate into telling stories about characters they don't own.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's one of the books I buy as a trade. So hopefully with issue 12 coming out, there'll be a trade soon.
Yeah, because they have the first ones in trade already. Did you get the trade for the original series?
Yes. I picked up the trade for the original because I'd heard about it when they did the first six-issue collection.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I read the whole thing in like 2 days. And now I've waited, 3 years?
At least.
For the next part?
And it's finally coming.
So what else have you read? What else is keeping you from your job here?
I had this guy's comic book, True Story, Swear to God, in my comic shop. Never read it until I got out of until I sold the store and moved on. But, I had a second wedding to go to. This one, Love and Capes, number 12. Number 12 seems to be a popular issue. This one is written and drawn by Thomas F. Zahler. Now, I would like to see Thomas be picked up by DC Comics to write Lois Lane, because Love and Capes is basically, it's a superhero story. All the superhero archetypes are there. We have the Superman archetype. We have the Batman. We have the Wonder Woman, whatever. He does the story from the point of view of the Lois Lane character. Her name is Abby Tennyson, and she's a bookstore owner that the Superman character called the Crusader, his identity, Mark Spencer, he basically falls in love with her at issue 1. And this issue 12 leads up to they're getting together, getting to know each other, becoming, falling in love. And then issue 12 is finally the wedding. And he writes this in a very believable style. He kind of has the superheroics off to the side. So it does happen, and it is off to the side, but when he's writing it, it's just phenomenal. And you know me, you put $3.99 in a comic book and I bulk. Issue 12 of Love and Capes was $5.99.
Wow.
I picked up both covers. He had one where all the superheroes were on it and one where he had people he knew and the secret identities of everybody on the cover. And I think I have reread this book about a dozen times, and it's just phenomenal. I recommend going out. The first issues are either available direct from him or in a trade paperback, and the later ones, like I said, go seek it out. It's definitely worth your read. So I was busy. I had two weddings to go to. I did not get a chance to look at Spider-Man. I mean, it's not like he was ever married. It doesn't matter.
So you're going to have it read for next week, right?
Is he getting married?
No.
Oh, all right. I'll see what I can do.
No. This is your job. This podcast is a job, and you need to read Spider-Man.
You know, you're beginning to sound like the teacher on Animal House. I'm serious, people. This is my job. Wait, okay. What have you read?
Well, I finally sat down and read the first trade of J. Michael Straczynski's Thor run. And it's very much a let's get the band back together story.
Mm-hmm.
Though I really like the story, but if I were reading it as a regular comic, I would have lost my mind. Because, you know, this trade, it's what, 6 issues in the trade, either 5 or 6 issues? And it read like it was 2 issues of a comic. They are stretching everything out so long. You know, page after page of, you know, oh, here's what Asgard looks like. Nobody says anything and the story doesn't move anywhere. When he did get to the story part of it, I like the fact that these Asgardian gods are interacting with the people in a small town in Oklahoma. I find that interesting. I like they did a story about New Orleans in there that was really, really good. But it really felt like they took 2 issues of story and stretched it out for 6. So as a trade, I liked it. If I would have, like I said, especially it's $3.99 a pop for those issues, I wouldn't have read it.
See, I read it as a comic book, and I think it's like you said, when if I were to gather them all together, it seems like it was a lot going on. but there really wasn't. And we'll never know where he was going to go because, again, editorial came in and told him, we want you to do this. And he said, no, I'm not going to. And you know what? He's making millions of dollars doing screencasts now. So it's unfortunate, but I think he's just another one of the writers that he's just gone from comics, you know?
No, he's over at DC. But everybody thinks he's gone because he's doing Brave and the Bold.
Yeah, you know how, I like JMS as a writer, but Brave and Bold just doesn't do it for me.
Well, I was shocked that, they're bringing him in on Brave and Bold. And we all know he's a high-dollar writer. They didn't start over with the number one. They took out a couple ads and previews and everything. So when you look at the sales are still going down on that book.
Mm.
So
didn't he do the Red Circle thing where he introduced the Archie characters?
Yeah, and the sales figures. I'm going to do a special podcast within a couple of weeks on the sales figures. We'll touch on it today. But by the fifth or sixth issue, those books are selling around 8,000 copies each. So I don't think anybody cares about those old Archie characters at all.
You know what, Corey? I'm going to throw the format of this out the window because I have a special guest with me right now.
Run-in?
She's going to tell me what comic books she likes. This is my daughter, Holly. Say hi, Holly.
Hi.
See?
It's a run-in. Hit him with a steel chair.
It's my daughter, Holly. Mm-hmm. She's 10 years old. Yeah. And let everybody know, what comics do you like? What comics do you read and which ones do you like?
What I last said is I mostly like The Simpsons, Baby Blues, and Garfield.
What do you like about The Simpsons?
What I like about The Simpsons is that it's a lot like the TV show with the comic books, and they're funny.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you said Baby Blues?
Yeah, Baby Blues. I like it because it shows how people can live with three kids, like what it's like for some people. And then what I like about Garfield is that I like how Garfield acts to Odie and John.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what kind of, stuff? Because there's, comic strips where John's talking to Garfield, and then Garfield thinks up this thing that's trying to insult John.
Now, I made you read this book. Which book is this?
It's called Bean World.
What do you think of Bean World?
I really like it. My favorite character is probably Prophy,
mm-hmm.
because she's the smart one and she's a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Now, before you got in here and talked about podcasts, what were you doing?
I was playing Lego Batman.
What? We have a Wii. Mm-hmm. Now, what is it about Lego Batman that you like?
Well, I like all the different kinds of suits that you can have, because you have custom suits that you can make, and you can play them in the game, and you can have, certain powers. Like, Batman has a heat suit,
mm-hmm.
where he can, touch really hot stuff without burning. And then, yeah.
So do any of your friends read comics?
Not that I can think of.
So you've never seen anybody reading comics at school, or they don't mention hey, I like Spider-Man or anything?
Well, they say they do talk about those superheroes, but they only kind of talk about the movies. So yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks, hon.
Yeah,
I appreciate your guest time.
Yep.
That last point I put in just because, you want to know where comics are going in the next couple of years. Right there. You got a whole group of 10-year-olds. Do not read comic books. They know the characters. They know. They play the games. They watch the movies. They don't read the comics.
Well, here's the thing about the games. And I was actually thinking about this earlier this week when I was planning this. And we'll talk about it later because, people are going to get tired of us talking about how much comic books cost.
Yeah.
But, you go to the shop, you buy a $2.99 comic, and it takes you 5 to 10 minutes to read. Now, I go to a video game store, and, I'm cheap, so I buy them used. But let's say you're buying it new. You buy a new game for your X-Cube, $3.90, whatever.
$50.
Whatever the kids are doing, it's, actually, most of them now are $60.
Ugh.
But you're going to get 40 to 100 hours of gameplay out of it. Yeah, I picked up Mass Effect and played it a few months ago. And, you know, it has the thing where you can see how much time you've played. And it's a story game. You know, it's a role-playing game. And it took me about 55 hours to finish everything in the game.
Mm.
So, you know, money-wise, I'll pay 50 bucks. Actually, I only paid 20.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll pay 20 bucks for 55 hours of entertainment, where with a comic book, I'm paying $3 and I'm getting like 10 minutes.
You know, and it's the same thing. I like buying the Star Trek trade paperbacks. They're $7.99 a pop. I get about 1-2 days of reading out of it.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. And there's some graphic novels, you know, I'll drop my 20 bucks or 15 bucks on and I got it done in 20 minutes.
Well, let's talk about the podcast itself. We mentioned that we have a Facebook page for the fans. We've got fans.
We do. It's the official Crazy Comics and Stuff podcast page. And if you really care, I suppose we can't count ourselves as fans, can we?
I'm a fan of myself.
Okay, because then we have 39 fans.
39!
I know. And two of them, one is you, one is me, and you could actually pop onto our site and get a good look at what we look like if you care to. Of course, we still want you as fans, so that's all I'm going to say.
And we got our first fan letter.
Yeah, thank you.
So we're happy about that. And I have gotten some people who are actually requesting the sad news music.
Oh, no, not the sad news music.
But we don't have any sad news right now.
Not now.
Now we're going to go to one of my favorite segments, Tales from the Shop.
From the Shop. I own two shops, as you will probably hear ad nauseum. The first one was named?
Hot Comics St. Paul.
The second one?
You get to name that one because it was your name.
Yes, Crazy Comics.
And
do you remember when I used to shop, when I used to sell at conventions before the store, the name that my partner and I went under?
Yeah, it was Peanut Butter and Jelly Comics, right?
Yep, P&J Comics, Pat and Joe Comics. You're pretty good. Hey, okay.
Hold on. J comes before P. Why did Pat get top billing?
Well, for the peanut butter and jelly effect.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it worked.
So if your partner would have been, you know, H, it just would have been like jelly and honey.
Yep.
How about jelly beans and pickles? That'd be a good sandwich.
Oh, don't mention that. I had that at the theater last night. Went and saw Alice in Wonderland.
In 3D.
3D. Woohoo! Of the only complaints I got, two people I knew had stigmatism, and they said they had trouble using the 3D glasses. Gave them a headache by the time they were done. But I saw it. I enjoyed it. But that has nothing to do with how I got the name Crazy. Sit back, pull up your favorite liquid. Mine happens to be a glass of cold gravy with a hair in it.
Hold on. We'll be sitting by a crackling fire. As Joe regales us with a tale.
The tale from the shop. Of how I got the name Crazy. Well, let's start out with the short answer. Meanness. That was basically it.
Okay, when you're done, I got to tell the story the first time I actually remembered you. Okay. So,
well, basically, I got the name Crazy, and it was a number of years before I actually got dubbed that. But what happened was, I mean, when I first opened my comic shop, and this was November 1992, the day Superman died was the day I took over the comic shop. My partner and I bought it from someone. A fantastic day to buy a comic book shop. I remember that day because I was busy pulling comics. We had about 1,000 copies of the Black Edition and the newsstand edition of Superman in the corner. People would come in, pick up the comic, walk around the back issues. As they passed by, there was one of the guys, Dan, being interviewed by local television about the death of Superman. They'd come by me, pick up whatever comics they had waiting, go right to the register where Brian was, ring him up, and out the door. And it was about 1,000 square foot. And it was just it was that way almost all day long. Once the calmness calmed down, I got, we had a pull and hold service. And I was really almost militant about people putting things back on the shelf. A pull and hold service in a comic book store is basically its lifeblood. And I viewed this idea that if you told me you wanted something, I would go to the ends of the earth to get it. I remember when Solar 10 came out, and I paid $6 a copy to get some for people just to sell it to them at cover price, which I think was $2.50. I took the loss because these were good customers. I wanted them taken care of. And it just got to the point where it got ridiculous. I mean, every month I'd be putting back about a long box worth of comics onto the shelf. I just couldn't afford it. And not only is it one copy that I lost the sale on, but there's two more because I'm ordering things 2 months in advance. If you remember the talk about preview comics last week. So we're always 2 months in advance. There's like two times a retailer concentrates on this week and 2 months from now. And I didn't mind if you came in and said, well, I don't want this because, Rob Liefeld's doing Teen Titans and it's really bad. He's only doing it for two issues, though. So, okay, fine, put it back on the shelf. But I wanted people just to take it off their list, so I stopped ordering it. So, I was militant. I was obnoxious. But I mellowed out about it. Eventually it got to the point where it's like, can I put this back? Go buy something else, There's other reasons. I'm not going to get into a lot of reasons why I bought the comic shop, but there were certain things that I saw that the current owner wasn't doing that we could do. I mean, he was kind of different in terms of how he bought things. I mean, he didn't like Iron Man, so he didn't order Iron Man for the show. Don't like it? Ain't ordering it. Which was really odd because there were a number of fans who wanted the Iron Man comic. They'd walk up to a store called Schindler's about mile away and buy it there just because he didn't want it. I also thought, as my partner did, that there were a lot more things that this guy could do, especially in terms of independent comics and stuff. An example of one of the promotions I did when I think it was Cerebus Zero came out and it was Spawn number 10 that Cerebus was in.
Yes.
So I made a deal. I mean, at the time I had 97 people buying the Spawn comic book. 3 buying Cerebus. So I made this deal. You could, if you bought a copy of Spawn number 10, I would give you a copy of Cerebus Zero free, just to try it. I actually showed this to Dave Sim at one of the Cap City retail shows, what we did, and he said it was actually a good idea. It was just a way to get people familiar with his comic. And after that happened, we had 100 people buying Spawn and 8 people buying Cerebus. So from the Spawn point of view, it wasn't really that significant. But to go from 3 to 8 in terms of Cerebus, that was pretty significant. A little bit later on in Hot Comics, a couple guys got together, Jess and Butch, and they did a comic book, a mini comic called Crazy Comics. And a mini comic, for those of you who have not been exposed to them, is basically draw a comic, Xerox it, print it, staple it, fold it, sell it. It's something you do yourself. You can do anywhere from 1 to 10 to hundreds. Like, who's the guy who does The Amazing Cynical Man? Friesel?
Yep, I think it's Matt Friesel, who worked at Schindler's at one point.
Didn't know that. I didn't know he was from this area.
Yep.
Well, Jess basically drew the comic, and Butch wrote it. They even had crossovers with other mini comics. There were a couple guys do Bob and Hal comic and they did it. Jess actually used the 6 issues he did as a portfolio to get into a local art college. So it got to the point where people actually enjoyed this comic because it was pretty funny. I mean, we had like 15 people that wanted to see the next issue. The thing was, is that Jess, and sometimes people in the background, not Butch, because Butch wrote a lot of it, but he got meanness streaks. And that's what the crazy part came into. They weren't doing it because they were celebrating comics or having fun with me. They were making fun at me. But it was funny. So I laughed along with it. And it got to the point where different things that would have happened at the shop just would put it in the comic book. You know, like my buddy Butch, I let him put a lot of books on hold. So there was a thing where I was busy chewing out a customer. You know, I can't afford these things, holding these things forever. And here comes Butch with like 200 comics. Here, hold these for me. Yeah, sure thing. You know, I'm going to go broke if I keep holding your comics for you. Not everything was funny. There was a whole bit where Jess was picking on one of the employees, Dave, because Dave eventually quit and he went work for, I think it was Best Buy at the time. And so Jess made this little backstory about Jess joining some neo-Nazi selling organization. And it wasn't funny, and it was kind of Jess's way of knocking Dave. Because, I mean, come on, you quit a comic book store, which is probably a dream job of any geek, to go work at Best Buy. You know. Anyways, like I said, it was a good idea. I stole it. I figured I feel comfortable stealing it because, first of all, it's based on my likeness. And second of all, he never really got permission to do that, even though it was a parody. And it actually got to the point where other people wanted to see themselves in the comic. I mean, my partner Pat got in there, employee Mike, Dave, the previous owner, Brian. And eventually just, you know, he went to school and he wasn't able to finish the comic. So I took the name Crazy. And like I said, 1998, I used it as my eBay handle. So if you're looking for me, Crazy. When I attempted to open a second shop around 2004, I decided just to name it Crazy Comics and Stuff. And I went with that. Sometime 2010, some rat bastard decided to steal this name and create a podcast with it. Apparently he's getting paid for it. I didn't get buku bucks for it. But
that's right. I pay myself $20 every episode to advertise my web strip.
And I have a contract from 1995 where you said I get 10% of anything you do because you were an aspiring writer. And, of course, it's been 0%. So I think you owe me $2.
Yeah, well, take it out of the $1,000 worth of credit you owed me when the shop closed.
All right, I happen to have that right here. I will subtract $2 from this week, $2 from last week. Now, what was you mentioned before I went on to the rant of where I got the name Crazy. By the way, just as a side note, as you go through different online auctions, I mentioned Toy Peddler. I'm on there as Crazy. I'm also signed on Widgix as Crazy. And if you're ever looking for comics cheap, there's a place called Atomic Avenue. I don't have anything up, but I have sold things there under the Crazy name. Atomic Avenue is the guys, they're tied into Comic Base. If you ever had that online comic book tracking system, it's a phenomenal place and it's a fun system if you decide to get into it. We're not even getting buku for that plug. So anyways, you'd mentioned something earlier before I ranted on about where I got my name, about the first time you heard me or saw me.
No, I'd met you a couple times, but you didn't really make an impression because, you know, I was working two jobs. I was a single dad, and they'd kind of tricked me into being the figurehead for the convention.
I remember that because we would meet at Annie's in Uptown, and I'd be like, well, you know, when Corey gets here, blah, blah, blah. When Corey gets here, he can do this stuff. We're waiting for the coming of Corey.
Yeah, when I showed up, it's okay, Corey. You're going to talk to all the retailers, and you're going to talk to the press, and you're going to send out the press releases, and et cetera. But I think it was, it had to be, you know, I remember I was working at a place and I had my own little cubicle. The first time I'd ever had a job with a cubicle. And my phone rang and it was you. And you were just furious. I don't even remember about what, but it was something to do with the con. And some that either hadn't been done or hadn't gotten finished yet, or I don't even remember. But you just were yelling at me and screaming at me And it went on for a good 5 to 10 minutes. And, you know, I said, okay, I'll do my best. I hung up the phone, and the person who sat in the cubicle across from me said, the hell was that? And I said, you know, for the life of me, I have no idea in the world.
I'm telling you, I'm looking at a picture right now of Corey sitting in his cubicle, and if it doesn't enrage you. And, you know, the sad thing about it is I have no idea what it was about either.
No, no. You know, well, as one of my friends who I game with says, friends don't let friends run conventions.
Very true.
And I still remember it was either 96 or 97 when, you know, I went up to somebody and I said, I'm not in charge of anything anymore. Not that. I'm done.
Yeah.
And they did it like Brian Wilson, who has every year we've run the convention. It's been, what, 21 years, 22 years?
Mm-hmm.
The last day of the convention, he always says, well, that's it. It's my last one. I'm done. I'm done. I'm done.
Yeah.
And he never is. Me, I was done. I don't even think I went to the next year because I was just so burned out. You know, when you get yelled at by David Prowse's agent for not wanting him at your convention.
I heard that one.
And all the retailers just hated me. You know, we brought the attendance. I think in 3 years, the attendance went from 500 to like 1,500. And they were still mad that there weren't enough people.
Yeah. I mean, that one of the reasons I think my partner Pat and I, we got involved with the MCBA is because we thought they didn't have the retailer perspective at the table. And we were right, but for the wrong reason. Eventually, even Gruber and I got to the point where, like, you know, no matter what you do, the retailers are going to complain.
Yep.
And I think it was until Pat McDonough got involved, and his attitude was, if you don't like it, I'll write you a check. We'll resell your table to someone else.
That's right.
And that kind of got the retailers to mellow out because, well, I mean, they might not be mellow. I don't know. It's just, that's not the job of the con. The con is to get people in the door, to get the guests there, and the retailers got to take care of it, what they're going to sell on their own. And if they don't know how to do it, they should sell their shop or close it.
The other thing was, you know, first off, this was when comics were just collapsing. It was like 95, 96, 97.
Yeah, yep.
You know, you look at sales. Sales went from the number one comic selling 1.5 million copies to the number one comic selling 97,000 copies. And that was in a like a 3-4 year period. The second thing that happened was over the years, you know, the first years we were begging retailers. You know, we were sending stuff out, please buy a table. And then by 98, 99, it was more tables were sold out, and the retailers who would whine and complain and, you know, want you to bend over backwards, they would call, you know, a month ahead of before the con and go, well, I guess I'm going to buy a table. Oh, I'm sorry. We sold out 6 months ago. Once we were able to do that, I think the attitude shifted. It shifted from
two at the time during the 90s. You remember, I think it was Greenberg was doing shows every month here in the Twin Cities. And I think he was doing them everywhere else. And it was almost overkill because, you know, if you didn't go to this con, you go to the next con. And the thing with the MCBA is they only do two shows a year and they want to make them special shows. For the longest time, they only did one show a year. It was the fall con.
No. We've always had the one day.
The one day?
It started with the one day.
Okay.
It started with the one day.
Even then, that's what, you know, like they said, this year there's so many cons popping up in the fall that they moved it, the two-day con, to the spring. So.
Uh-oh, Joe. Do you hear that?
I don't, but I'm feeling it.
That's right. It's the sad news music. Sad news, everyone. Somebody has declared a death sentence on Mickey Mouse.
Well, it's about frickin' time. I mean, what happened?
According to the London Telegraph, Sheikh Mohammed Munajed has claimed that Mickey Mouse is one of Satan's soldiers and makes everything he touches impure.
Marching into prophets. I'm sorry, what?
Everything Mickey Mouse touches is impure. Depictions of creatures in cartoons such as Tom and Jerry and Mickey Mouse has taught children that mice are lovable. When under Islamic law, both household mice and their cartoon counterparts must be killed.
Well, I'm for the killing thing, but I mean, I don't know about everything they touch is bad, because I mean, I did get a hug from Mickey Mouse once.
It was 1976. I was a small child. My parents had sold their house and bought a different house. And they took some of the money from that, and we went down to Disney World. And this was the bicentennial year. So Disney World was packed. It was insane. And there were, you know, parades constantly and fireworks, and it's America's 200th birthday, and I was just waiting for issue 200 of Captain America for the end of the Mad Bomb story. But there we were.
That wasn't a double size special issue, was it?
No, they didn't do double size anniversaries back then.
Yeah, it was just kind of,
Well, it was a special issue, but it was a double size.
Yeah.
But it was Jack Kirby. It was Jack Kirby. It was Mad Bomb. So the one time we saw one of the people in costume, it was Goofy. And he was, you know, going up to Cinderella's castle, and he was booking it. And my parents had an 8mm camera. So our film of us at Disney World is me and my sisters running after Goofy and not able to catch up because he's going too fast.
What year was that?
76.
Yeah, I know. I think we went one of the first years it was open, I was pretty young then. The only character we got a picture of was Minnie Mouse. And I think Disney finally figured it out. You know, people were complaining, we came to see the characters, but you guys aren't showing out the characters. The only time they would pop up is when they're trying to control a crowd or move things. So now they're a lot more liberal about getting to see the characters. They even sell autograph books in the stores. So when we were down there, we went down there, I think it was early 2002, because, you know, it was after the terrorist attack and everything was super cheap. $1,500 for four people to stay at Disney World. We bought the kids the autograph books, and then as you ran around seeing the different characters, they would all give autographs. There was maybe one character, I think the baboon from Jungle Story, because of the way his hands are shaped, he couldn't do it. But you know, the live actors doing the characters would do it. Tigger, of course, I got Pluto, my favorite. And it was actually more fun to actually see the characters. Plus, they actually schedule events now where the characters will come out, do whatever, and then stick around for pictures and signings. So it's a lot more different than it was when we first went in the early 70s. They're not as stingy with the characters.
Well, we're running up against time here. We're up 50 minutes.
Ugh. It seems we just got started. You know, I better stop singing because we're going to have to pay some copyright fees.
Yeah, well, so there won't be a Q&A, but I do want to do the Casey Kasem countdown.
All right.
So sales figures aren't out yet, but they do have some preliminary stuff. So we have the top 10 comics for February and the top 10 trade paperbacks. So right. should I start with number one or do the whole Casey Kasem
down? Let's go backwards. Let's go backwards.
All right. At number 10, and if you have any thoughts on them, Uncanny X-Men number 521.
Don't read it.
At number 9, Flash Rebirth.
Waiting for the trade.
Only about, what, 3 or 4 months late?
Well, wasn't it tied in? It had to tie in to Blackest Night?
No, it was the artist was on a podcast called Word Balloon, and he apologized, saying he had health problems.
Oh, no. He's forgiven.
No, because he's on Facebook every day recording himself singing.
Okay, maybe he's not forgiven.
At number 8, Green Lantern Corps, number 45.
Ooh, I read that one.
It's a Blackest Night tie-in.
Yes.
Let's see. At number 7, New Avengers number 62.
I read that one, too.
At number 6, Dark Avengers number 14.
I didn't read it, but I have a feeling it's going to be a quarter book any day now.
Well, no, because, well, we'll get into it later, but I think it was a spotlight on a character who may not be with us much longer.
Mm.
Numbers 4, 5, and 4 are Batman and Robin, number 9 and number 8.
I have them lined up. I'm going to read them right after I get on The Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, I am so loving Grant Morrison's Batman. I know a lot of people are not liking it. Although, I think it's just people online because, boy, it's the number one selling Batman book by far.
At the charity art auction booth last year, DC very generously gave a ton of comics to the MCBA, and they basically used them in the grab bags and as giveaways. We had Batman and Robin number ones that we would just give away as a bonus comic. Or if you wanted to pay a quarter for it, because we were just, it all went to charity. But if you bought anything, you got a bonus comic.
I'm loving the Batman and Robin run. And I like the fact that they're doing different artists for different story arcs because Frank Quitely isn't able to do a monthly book. Cameron Stewart's drawing it now, and Cameron Stewart's art's just amazing. At number 3, Green Lantern number 51.
Woohoo! Read it.
At number 2 is Siege number 2.
Ah, we talked about that in the first podcast.
Which may have the most violent scene I've ever seen in a mainstream comic.
Well, it was similar. It's almost a mirror image of what happened in New Avengers 1.
Well, not the tearing the guy apart and seeing all the body parts all over the art.
Yeah, tore Carnage apart.
Yeah, but you didn't get to see, you know, it wasn't drawn in gruesome detail.
Well, you know, somebody's been playing, you know, Resident Evil too long.
And number 1, Blackest Night number 7.
Oh, I read that one too.
I think Blackest Night is probably one of the most successful crossovers in that. Any book that ties into it seems to be going up in sales. Fans are really excited about the series, and it's keeping its sales. I'm going to be real interested to see what they do with Green Lantern after this, because it seems, you know, Geoff Johns has said he had 3 major stories for Green Lantern. One was the Rebirth, one was the Sinestro Corps War, and one was Blackest Night. So I'm wondering what direction he'll go after this. When you get to graphic novels, at number 10, Berserk, Volume 33.
Don't read it.
Well, it's a manga.
Yeah.
I know your other daughter. Didn't she read manga for a while? Wasn't she into it?
She did when she was going from 8th grade through 8th and 9th grade. It was big. But I don't think, I'll have to ask her when she's home if the kids are reading manga anymore. It doesn't sound like she is, because she used to come up and say, "What, you know, I'm interested in Love Hina. I want to hear about Rama."
She's always been into the kind of the gothy comics, I've noticed.
Yeah. She went through a goth stage. I know we were worried about it, but she'll try almost anything I give her. She liked Mean World too when I gave it to her, so.
Well, I'll be honest, I don't know of anyone who's actually picked up and read Mean World who hasn't liked it. Mean World is, I can't even describe it.
No.
Because it's, if you ever read the book Flat World, it's the same sort of thing. They're creating this alternate reality that has no connection with ours at all. It's almost like mythical stories. Somebody once described it as, it's like Native American myths in comics.
Yeah, that's actually pretty close to it. It's like watching a process unfold.
Yeah.
I've got the graphic novel here. There's 3 graphic novels. They reprint the original Eclipse minis or series, and then issue 3 of the graphic novel is all original stories. And right now the creator, Larry Mauder, is working on the 4th one, which is supposedly out towards the end of the year. It says, what is Bean World? It's a weird fantasy dimension operating under its own rules and laws. It's about the affinity of life. All the characters, whether they are friends or adversaries, understand that ultimately they depend on each other for survival. Please do not search for scientific or magical explanations. You won't find any. Bean World is a separate reality. It's not just a place. It's a process. It is what it is. And that's all, folks.
Back to the countdown.
All right.
Number 9 is Star Wars Legacy, Volume 8. I haven't been reading the Star Wars comics in quite a long time.
It's a number 3, I think.
Okay.
But now, it's good.
Which one is Legacy about?
Legacy is the one... Okay. Hang on a second. Let me go grab a copy. I've got Volume 4. It's Alliance. Basically, it's 100 years, about 130 years after Endor, which is pretty much where the Star Wars timeline, you figure out where you are based on what happens in Endor. It's in the future, and it's dealing with the rebirth or re-emergence of the Sith. And the hero is, I think it's Cadence Skywalker, and he has the ability to become a Jedi, but he doesn't want to do it. And this, the first three volumes I've read is where he reluctantly is being drawn into what we would call his destiny. And there's some oh my God moments, you know, especially when he finally does decide to pick up the lightsaber and go after the bad guys. But like I said, I'm up to issue 4. Issue 8 is out.
And it's number 9 on the countdown.
Woohoo! Dark Horse. Doing Star Wars right since the 1987? 89? I don't know.
All right, at number 8, Hellblazer Pandemonium Hardcover. It's an original Hellblazer story.
What's the name of
Pandemonium.
I might have to pick that up.
I'm actually surprised it did so well because the Hellblazer comic itself only sells around 10,000 copies a month. But the hardcover, you know, the people who read Hellblazer must be devout fans because they bought enough of the hardcover to put it at number 8.
Longest running Vertigo title, I believe.
And it's, I think, probably one of the longest running titles created in the 80s.
You think that's a classic example of just that sells better as a trade?
I don't know what it is. We'll talk about sales and Vertigo and things like that in a later episode. Dark Tower, Stephen King series, comes in at number 7. At number 6 is Green Lantern Secret Origin trade paperback that reprints the Secret Origin run. That's basically the story that happened right before Blackest Night. At number 5 is Star Wars Adventures, Volume 3, Luke Skywalker and the Treasure of the Dragon Snakes.
Snakes!
It's not just dragons, it's not just snakes, it's dragon snakes!
Is that where you pick them up and you, like, drag them across the parking lot?
Moving on. At number 4, Naruto, number 47. So...
I go with that type of volume.
Oh, yeah. So somebody's still buying it. I will say I see Naruto volumes at Target. It's one of the few comics I see at Target. I see Naruto, and Marvel has some special reprints of their kids line that I see there. So Naruto's doing well. And number 3, All-Star Superman Volume 2, trade paperback. We talked about that in our last podcast. My favorite Superman run ever.
I'm waiting for the absolute.
Number 2, Kick-Ass, the premier hardcover.
I'm not big on hardcovers, but I may have to break down and buy that. I, for some reason, had Kick-Ass, I think, 1 through 3, and read them, enjoyed them. And then when I saw how silly they were going on eBay, I sold them. First prints. But I just figured I'm going to buy that one as a graphic novel. I have a bud who's seen a preview of Kick-Ass, and he gives it 5 out of 5.
For those of you who don't know what Kick-Ass is, it's Mark Miller and John Romita Jr. and it's a creator-owned story. Really, it's a movie pitch as a comic, which normally I don't care for, but this one's by Comic Book People, so it wasn't as thin as most of them are. It's what if some kid dressed up in a costume to fight crime. So in the first issue, he gets his ass handed to him and ends up in the hospital. I've only read the first two issues so far, and it's really fun. And finally, the number one selling trade paperback for February, Fables Volume 13, The Great Fables Crossover.
And I've read that. Fables is one I picked up as graphic novels, and it's phenomenal. You know the stories. We were told them as kids. Well, now you can find out what they've been up to. It's a Vertigo line. Let me see. Oh, how do you say his last name? Bill Willingham.
Willingham.
And a slew of artists. It's fantastic. Definitely pick it up.
And the thing is with the crossover, they did, it crossed from Fables to the spinoff book, which is Jack of Fables? Jack of something.
Yep.
And then there was another miniseries, The Literals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually the point where I decided, you know what? I'm not going to buy it as a monthly comic anymore. I'm going to buy trades. And it is also Vertigo's best-selling book. And it's really the first success they've had since, Preacher, really. Because most of their other books, and like I said, I'll talk about it in the podcast I talk about on sales, but Vertigo's books are not selling well except for Fables.
I hope they keep doing the Preacher hardcovers, because I sold my Preacher trades a long time ago, and same thing with the actual issues, because I need to get them. They've got the first two out. I hope they finish them.
Yeah, Vertigo's really good about putting everything out in a trade. And one of the reasons for that is, I know with the creator-owned books, if they're out of print for a certain amount of time, the creators can actually take them to other publishers.
Hence, is that why they got rid of Boys?
The reason they got rid of Boys, from what I hear, is that they were very, very uncomfortable with the sex and violence in the book. But it's why they did a paperback of Screamer, which I doubt anybody but, like, the people who worked on it remember. Because the contract time was about up, and Pete Milligan, who's the writer, was getting ready to take it over to another publisher. And actually, there have been two books that have gone over to other publishers. There was 2020 Visions, which was written by Jamie Delano. And they didn't, I don't think DC ever put that in a trade paperback.
And he
took it over, and it's now available from another publisher. And then Outlaw Nation, which is another Vertigo book that I think it lasted 17 issues. And they didn't put that in a trade paperback, and the creators took it over to Image, and it actually sold pretty well over at Image. So DC's probably going to keep a lot of the Vertigo stuff in print just so people can't take it somewhere else. And
with Peter David's Fallen Angel, because that was a regular DC book. That wasn't a Vertigo, but now it's over at IDW.
Well, what it was, it was creator-owned in the Marvel in the DC universe. And when DC canceled it, Peter David says, well, I've got an offer to take it to another publisher. Since he owned it, he was able to do that. And DC's done a couple creator-owned books in their universe. The other one I know for sure was Sovereign 7.
Yeah, Chris Claremont's.
And I remember when Sovereign 7 came out, it was Chris Claremont, creator-owned in the DC universe. And by the third or fourth issue, no one cared. Well, the clock on the wall has told us that we've gone at least an hour.
And you know what I did? I tricked you. You did do a Q&A.
Oh. Well, we did, but I'm trying to keep us under a certain time limit. Trying to keep the show moving along.
Yeah, because I noticed the last podcast at 54 just quit. So we don't want that to happen.
Well, no, we have our tagline.
Yes. Do you got it right this time?
Yes, I have it right this time. And remember, the comic we like the least, we still like more than the comic you like the most.